This is Mostly Joe, and I'm nobody's minion. But if I was one, I'd be a Game On minion.
Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Game On.
Greetings once again, Gamer Nation. You found your way into Game On, and there's no help for you now. It's Tuesday, June 23rd, 2009. This is episode 25, and we're just raring to go. I'm your host, Brian, trading under the name Fiddleback on the forums. With me today, in a completely unexpected turn of events, is the one man who makes Red Cross instructors nervous just by walking into the room, Andy.
Yes, that's correct. I believe I have been declared a military emergency.
How you doing today, Andy?
She threatened to separate us.
She did. It was kind of scary, really. All 12 pounds of her threatened to separate us.
Yeah.
I don't think that was going to work.
I'm just fine and dandy. How are you doing today?
I'm dandy and fine.
Dandy and fine, excellent.
Dandy and fine, yes. What are we going to be talking about today?
Spandex, tigers, and candy bars. Oh, wait. yeah, I was right. Batman and Robin, Siegfried and Roy, peanut butter, and chocolate. What do all these things have in common?
You mean besides vague homosexual overtones?
Excellent, yes, yes, this... Slightly. That's right, there's only two!
Oh, two.
Thank heaven. So tonight, we're going to talk about two-player games.
That sounds wonderful. I wonder why we're talking about two-player games.
I blame Cat.
I do too. I think it's all Cat's fault. All Cat's fault.
Upkeep phase.
Well, thanks to Mostly Joe for the bumper. And if you would like to leave us a bumper or send us a bumper or do whatever it is you do with bumpers, record a little bit of audio for us and send it on to gameon@d20radio.com. We'd love to have them. They populate the front of the show and keep each other company. So get right on that and send us some.
Yes, and we've changed the format a little bit. If you would rather not be a Game On minion, you can take the route Joe went and be a Game On bitch. Sorry, I had to throw that out there.
No. Oh my god.
Oh, the hate mail is being written as we speak.
No, I think Joe's in bed right now.
I've got nothing to worry about.
Well, left field, here we are. There's been a fair bit of activity across the D20 Radio Network this week, and we've got it right here, right now, just for you. Department 7, the D20 Modern Podcast, has a new episode ready for inclusion in your latest secret mission. Case 003, Stronger Than MASH, takes you down the dangerous road of the strong hero, as well as giving you NPC advice and introducing you to the netbook of famous characters. It's D20 Modern on Department 7.
Yeah, strong heroes are good, but fast. That's
mm-hmm,
the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Zoom. Join GM Dave and, that guy, Fiddleback, for the latest installment of the Holocron, the podcast about all goodness coming out of BioWare regarding, you guessed it, Star Wars The Old Republic. Dave and Fiddleback make a valiant effort to compensate for a lack of quality updates from BioWare over the past 2 weeks, and by golly, they just might make it. Hear about the smuggler class and all the latest doings of the Order of 66 Guild in Holocron number 14, a cheap show for cheap updates.
Yeah, that was a odd show to do.
That almost didn't happen.
Yeah, almost didn't happen. There's a long story there. Meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast talks about mecha and manga, or manga. I prefer manga myself. Mostly Joe is playing host to Alejandro Melchor of Mutants and Masterminds fame as they talk all things mecha in the latest episode of Meanwhile, episode 17, Mecha and Manga.
What is he? He just have a never-ending bag of hosts that he pulls from?
He's got a very large closet in which he keeps them tied up and brings them out to record podcasts in exchange for food.
My gosh, he just, every week it's something new.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, maybe we'll have to resort to such devious happenings. Episode number 2 of the Minus World is up. Jake and Dylan talk hedgehogs of all things and Sega. And oh, how the
Sega.
Mighty have fallen. You'll either love it or hate it. As the boys tell you why Sonic isn't as cool as he used to be in the rise and fall of the Mighty Hedgehog, or blast processing. WTF.
Radio Free Eberron, Hamlet, is back with show number 24. The GMs are all about the new Eberron Player's Guide in this episode, and boy, do they give it the once-over. The new 4E version of Eberron is fully explained and laid out before you, just waiting for your pink, pearly ears to give it a listen.
Pink, pearly ears.
Yeah. I have to say, they almost talked me into getting the Eberron setting. Almost for 4E. I mean, it's so close.
You're not a big Eberron fan, are you?
No, I'm not.
if they can convert
boy,
you.
It sounds like good stuff in there.
Awesome. Yeah, I keep wanting to get back into D&D, but, you know, we're having hard enough time just getting Star Wars together. So.
Right.
It's all waiting for you on the D20 Radio Network, so head on over to www.d20radio.com and click a link or two and check out all our offerings. Visit the forums while you're there. We'd like to hear from you.
We would. It's true. We're lonely.
Really and for true.
Bits and pieces.
Somehow, somewhere, we'll find the news and bring you the juiciest bits and the crunchiest pieces. Why? Because we care. That's right, we care about you and getting you access to all the coolest games. Just after we get them.
Much, much later. Ted Allspock! Allspock.
Close enough.
Allspock. I like that name. Has announced one of the Spiel 09 releases from his Bezier games. Bezier?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
Bezier? Most people would say Bezier.
Okay, well, okay. You know, it must be French to confuse me.
Right.
Beer and pretzels. Here's what Allspock has to say about the origins of this game. What is the definitive beer and pretzels game? Until now, you might have said Munchkin 17. The scenario, we've finally run the series directly into the ground, or Candyland, the drinking game variant, where everyone turns over a card that has colored squares on it. Everyone drinks. Or maybe Dime Ocker, if you have no idea what I'm talking about because of this unbridled confusion. I don't even know what I'm talking about. I went on a spiritual quest to determine the essence of beer and pretzels games and receive the ultimate epiphany in game form. Because I used up what little creativity I had by coming up with lots of clever text used to promote the game, like this paragraph. I simply named the game Beer and Pretzels.
Clever. Clever man.
The man is a genius. So how do you play? Well, I'm glad you asked. You throw coasters on a table. Seems easy enough. Earn money. Throw more coasters. Earn more money. And so forth until you stand coasterless with fistfuls of cash. I love it. Counting the loot to see who has the most. Each coaster has either beer or pretzels depicted on it. Who'd have thought?
Imagine.
With the pretzels being worth different values and the beer doubling your money.
That's weird because it's the other way around
whenever
I do
around,
beer.
Yes. You score only for coasters that are completely visible. Napkins. Oh, yes, there are napkins, too. Merely cover up the mess. Costing you money, too, if your aim stinks, says Allspock. There tends to be name-calling, bragging, self-high-fiving, and the occasional brawl during the game. All of which add to the rich atmosphere and theme. Rich atmosphere and theme.
So yeah. It's a night at the pub.
The game includes string for a playing boundary. Precious, precious string. Beer and Pretzels is for 2 to 5 players, ages 6 and up. I see problems
wait,
here.
Wait a minute. You're not from around here, are you?
Oh, Billy had his first 6-pack at age 5. Oh, with a playing time of 10 to 15 minutes and a retail price of $30. That's some spendy coasters. Allspock is taking pre-orders on the Bezier Games website with free shipping with the U.S. and coasters for a 6th player. Beer and Pretzels is scheduled for an Oktoberfest 2009 release.
Very good. Beer and Pretzels. That sounds like it's just kind of a fast, fun little game that you could maybe play at a bar.
You could try.
You could try, yeah. It'd be great until things get soggy. Or you get confused as to which coaster is which.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You betcha. Asmodee is holding a design contest for the 3rd Formula D expansion that will be released in November 2009. As with the recently announced Hockenheim Valencia expansion that's due out in July 2009, insert advertising here, each Formula D expansion includes a professional racing circuit as well as a street racing circuit. One half of the 3rd expansion has been locked in, the new F1 circuit in Singapore, but the street racing half will be determined by entries in a design competition. To enter, you must submit the layout of your circuit, which must fit onto a 65cm by 98cm game board. Please do your own conversions. Any special rules needed for your circuit? Rules must be in English with a maximum length of 3,000 characters, including spaces. And designs may be submitted from all parts of the world with an entry deadline of August 31st, 2009. Eric Randall and Laurent Leveur, co-designers of Formula D, will be part of the jury that determine the winner. Submit your entry by email to asmodee@asmodee.com with Concours Circuit Formula D as the subject.
Interesting. I might have to look into that.
Yeah, time to break out the graph paper.
Yes, sir. Lone Wolf Development and Hero Labs now bring all the power and time savings of E9 award-winning character management to the Cortex System RPG and its derivative game systems, including the Battlestar Galactic RPG and the Serenity RPG. More information and screenshots can be found at www.wolflair.com.
That's a fairly awesome chunk of news, actually.
Yeah, that could actually be kind of handy for cranking out characters. I haven't actually used Hero Lab, but I've seen it before, and it does look interesting.
I have tinkered with it, and if it didn't cost money, I'd use it all the time.
Yeah, there's that
that money thing.
Entry fee going on there.
Yeah, but it's pretty good actually. What I've played with the Hero Labs and whatnot, it was all 3.5 edition at the time, but it seemed to do a fairly decent job. And if they've incorporated the Cortex system, I might end up with it.
Yeah, I might have to look at that too. Now, do they have anything for the modern D20 modern on the current Hero Lab thing?
You know, I think they do, but I'm not 100% certain on that. I know they cover a variety of systems and a variety of rule sets, So, yeah, you can go over there to wolflayer.com.
Yeah, I might have to go check that out, yeah.
Yeah, give it a gander. Give it a gander. A goose. Whatever. Now then, if you would like to know more about these stories and other exciting game-related news informational bits, press releases, declarations of independence, whatever. Anyway, you can check them all out at www.gamingreport.com, www.boardgamenews.com, and www.robotviking.com. And now, on with the show. Well, thanks go out to Kat for suggesting this topic, and yes, that just proves we do actually pay attention to what our listeners' suggestions are. We are but two. He and I and he and me. We, two. And sometimes, that's all we got. Because Jake has, you know, this imaginary thing called a life. He goes out and does things. Which is okay. We don't mind that so much. But it does leave Andy and I occasionally sitting here at a game night going, well, what should we play? To which our traditional answer has been, I don't know, what do you want to play? You would not believe the amount of time you can kill with that decision. It's almost as good as the amount of time you can kill with, what do you want to eat? Well, I don't know, what do you want to eat? Yeah, no suggestions good enough. Anyway. Point being, there are two-player games out there, and we do occasionally play two-player games, and we actually like two-player games when it's time to play with two players. We sometimes prefer, you know, if we have the crowd available to play games with more people, but no. This week, two-player games. That's what we had to choose from.
Or if Jake's here and we just want to leave him out, we'll play a two-player game.
Yeah, because we're mean like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're kind of mean like that. Anyway. So we have a couple of conditions we set for ourselves as we came up with this list of two-player games. One, nothing obvious. For example, war games. That's pretty obvious. Those are very two-player-y. And in fact, I am hard-pressed to think of a war game that requires more than two players, because you're usually playing one side or the other, and that's it. Collectible card games. Guess what? They missed out again on another episode. Because those also are kind of too obvious in terms of two-player games. If you're not already playing a collectible card game, it's not very likely that we're going to be able to talk you into playing one just so that you can play two-player. And, let's see, what was our other condition there, Andy? I know there was a third one. Yeah, okay. So
yeah, throw it back at me.
Why are you here? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. You had the munchies. Okay. So, having said that, there are a set of two-player games that we enjoy, and we will now take you through them. The first game we want to talk about is a game called Elkfest. This is a dexterity game, believe it or not, which means it relies more on your ability to manipulate the pieces than it does on any particular ability to understand rules or to manipulate the game system.
So what you're saying is the women will win at this.
Well, with your little sausagey fingers, perhaps. well, Elkfest is surprisingly enough, you open the box, it contains two moose. It's some sort of British thing. They elk, moose, whatever. Same critter, believe it or not, depending on what side of the water you're on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because from around here, there aren't that many moose, and elk are distinctively...
Yes, quite a bit different. But that's another story altogether, and a different podcast entirely. So you open the box up. You have two wooden moose. Or meese. No, moose. And a series of what we'll call stones, even though they are, in fact, small wooden discs. and a couple of planks, wooden planks, which represent the shore of a river, believe it or not. And the idea is that you are to get your moose from your side of the river to your opponent's side of the river without it getting wet. If it gets wet, it has to go back to the starting space, and you begin again. Now, the way this works is, with these little stones, you flick them out into the river with the idea that you're trying to get them in position so that your moose can stand atop the stones and keep his feet dry. Of course, at the same time, as you alternate turns, your opponent is trying to do the same thing, and there's absolutely no rule in the world that says you can't knock a moose off his stone. So, yeah, it becomes kind of a take-that game while you're flicking these stones around. Andy is, by the way, no good at this game whatsoever.
Hey.
But, yeah, it's a fun little game.
If this game was called Sink Your Moose, I would win every
That's
time.
Right. That's right. So, it takes maybe 10 or 15 minutes to play once through. It's a lot of fun, because there's lots of flicking going on and discs moving around and moose suddenly being unable to step from one stone to another. And it's pretty easy. There's very few rules that you have to absolutely learn or anything like that. And it's easy to get into it and get it playing, you know, very immediately. They're all wooden bits. For the game being no more complicated than it is, they're actually pretty nice bits. But yeah, that's what it, you get your moose to the other side, you win.
And it sounds easy, but
well, then there's Andy.
For some of us that are, you know, challenged when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, challenged. So Elkfest, it's available from Mayfair Games, and it's part of the Cosmos line of games, which are noted for being two-player games exclusively, so the Cosmos line. Another member of the Cosmos line, and you've, I believe, heard us talk about this before, is called Lost Cities. This is a game designed by Rainer Knizia. It is two-player, and the idea is that you are an explorer about to go on a series of expeditions. And you proceed on these expeditions by laying down cards in numerical order from 1 to 10. The difficulty is that your opponent is using the same stack of cards that you're using. So you don't have access to every card because your opponent may be holding some of the ones you need. Now, you remember I said it was all about doing this expedition? The other thing you remember is that I said it was designed by Rainer Knizia, which means you can ignore the theme because the theme is just there to make things look pretty in this game. This is really an exercise in mathematically gaining the advantage over your opponent and controlling the amount of risk that you are willing to take on. Each expedition scores points independently, and you score the points by adding up the cards that you have managed to successfully get in play by the end of the game, and the game ends when the deck runs out. The complication is, though, if you start an expedition, you immediately subtract 20 points from the eventual worth of that expedition. Which means that if you don't get at least 20 points of cards laid down, then you have a losing expedition, one that will either win you no money or cost you money as the game goes on. And to further complicate this, there are what we like to refer to as handshake cards, because that is the illustration upon them, but which are, in fact, I believe called deal cards or something like that. Anyway, what they do is they multiply the value of your expedition by 2 for each card you lay down, and there are 3 in each of 5 colors. So if you start an expedition with a handshake card, it's actually not just worth minus 20, it's now worth minus 40. Now, you can correct this mathematically as you add more cards to it, and it's not that big a problem. But if for some reason you end up with negative points in your expedition because you didn't get enough cards into play, then that multiplier is going to multiply your negative score as well. And if I recall correctly, the full range of points is from minus 80 per expedition to plus 160 for each expedition. So there's quite a range of potential outcomes for you. Once you've played through the deck, you add up all your expeditions, and that gives you your total points for that game. It is traditional to play at least three games. And at the end of three games, the one with the best score can be declared the winner.
And I believe that was you when we played the game.
Yep. That was me again. You know, Gamer Nation may get the impression that I win a lot of games. And that's not exactly true. I just win potentially more than my fair share. Anyway. Lost Cities, it's a lot of fun. It can play very quickly, and in fact, the more quickly you play it, the more fun it is, because there's less analysis paralysis, we like to call it, where you get stuck trying to think of your options.
Yeah, that's where I get bogged down in the game, because there's so many different little options going on, and you're trying to collect the cards from lowest denomination to the largest, and usually get stuck somewhere in the middle and trying to play out a hand and hoping you can get enough points for it. So, right. Yeah, if you do it quickly, it can be pretty interesting.
One thing we do want to point out by way of making this game a little bit easier for you is do not be fooled and try to start all five expeditions. That is not going to work for you.
No, you will wind up with a brain cramp in a hurry and not have any cards.
Yes, and no points whatsoever. You'll be so far in the hole it won't even be funny. But anyway, Lost Cities, it's a game we enjoy playing. I've played it with, I think, just about everybody I've ever gamed with. At some point, we've broken it out and played it, and I haven't had one yet that didn't enjoy it. Unless, of course, Andy wants to jump in and say, oh, I didn't like it, you know. But.
Well, you know, it's no Fiji, but it's...
This is true. Okay, so let's say you're not particularly into dexterity games, you're not particularly into card games. What options are there for you? Well, there's a game called Street Soccer.
Doesn't soccer require dexterity?
Shh. Not on the board.
Ah.
Street Soccer. It's a fun little game. It's made by Quali Games, Kwali. You'll have to look them up on the internets. What it is essentially five-a-side soccer. You have a soccer field, which is conveniently mowed into a grid. And you have each side has five wooden men, which get placed upon this grid in sort of specific ways. But after that, once your teams are placed, then the kickoff is occurring. You roll a die to find out how far you can move the ball. It's a six-sided die, so obviously your choices are somewhere from 1 to 6. And you're thinking to yourself, well, that doesn't seem like a lot. But what happens is every time the ball touches a player, it's as if that player was passing the ball to somebody else. So the die actually picks up an extra move, or the ball actually picks up an extra move on top of what was rolled. And this leads to some very unusual methods of counting, and some quite astounding little full-field goals if you do it right. You have the opportunity to move your men as play goes on. There is a timer. You play for... And it's not an actual physical timer. Basically, it's I go, he goes, we move the timer one. I go, he goes, we move the timer one. And you play for 30 minutes, essentially. I've seen this game go really badly. But not badly in an I didn't enjoy it kind of way. Badly as in all my guys are out of position, and there's no way for me to get anybody in to keep him from, you know, from scoring for the next, three or four times. And I've seen this game go really kind of hardcore head-to-head, where hardly anybody is scoring or anything like that, because everything is just pitch perfect, and all the shots are well covered and blocked. So yes, there is quite a bit of strategy involved in this game. If you like soccer, I think you'll enjoy this. If you don't like soccer, I still think you'll enjoy this, because it plays very, very well. And once you get the hang of it, it's quite easy to see how you need to set up your guys and how the flow of play should work for you.
Yeah, that's I really enjoyed this one, and not just because I like soccer, but just the way that the game played out. Like you said, it's very quick, it's very easy to pick up on, and it's very interesting to see how some of the plays work out. Trying to make passes to your teammates, trying to get the ball into the goal, trying to keep the ball away from the other player, and there's, you know, you've got to really pay attention to what's going on.
Yeah, if it's very easy to accidentally get your guys out of position and leave a rather long shot wide open for your opponent. So you've got to pay attention to all the positions of all the players on the board and where you're going and what you want to do. And sometimes your turn consists of nothing more than just passing the ball away from where your opponents can get to it easily.
Yeah,
just to keep it out of their hands.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you watch an actual soccer match, you'll see them kick the ball halfway back the opposite end of the goal just to keep it away from the other players so that they can reposition their guys and get the ball back into play, and that's what you'll wind up doing.
Yeah. It's not in-depth, you know. It's not an in-depth game, but it is an interesting lightweight simulation of five-a-side soccer. And I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I actually want to pick one up because you can actually pick up different colored sets. It comes with wooden meeples for your soccer players, and you can get them in different colored uniforms, which is actually, to me, it's kind of neat. I have a set collecting type of thing that I like to do on games like that. But as small as this game is, you can pick up a couple of different sets and have all the different colored meeples for it, which is, to me, it comes across as being kind of a neat little thing.
Yeah, there's, let's see, what have I got? I've got red and green. Is that what the one
red,
I...
Red, red
and
yellow. Red and orange.
Red and yellow, I think.
Red and yellow.
There's
blue and green.
Blue
the
and green,
one, I think.
And I think there's also a purple set out there somewhere, but I can't remember what its companion
yeah,
color is.
Yeah, I think there's, it might have been orange or something, but I think there's about three different sets that you can actually pick up, which is, you know, it doesn't really add anything to the game specifically, but if you enjoy collecting stuff like that, it's kind of fun to have something different from what the other person does.
You can customize your own teams and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the next two-player game. This is going to seem, I don't know, maybe a little bit crazy, but this is a card game based on a board game that's extremely popular.
Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, yes, it is. This is the Settlers of Catan card game.
Nobody plays this game.
Well, we you know, we do.
No, we don't.
Well, we try. We played it a couple times.
Yeah, a few.
Essentially, take the whole idea of the Settlers of Catan, the trading, the negotiation, the resource gathering, the building of buildings and that kind of stuff, and condense it down into a two-player card game. And be surprised that it all works. You still have the usual things. You still roll your dice to see what resources produce, except now these resources are represented by cards that you have in play on your side of the table. You still need to collect resources to build cities and towns, except now these cities and towns are represented by cards that sit on your side of the table. You can still trade resources. You trade them with your opponent right across from you. There's a limit to the number of any one kind of resource you can have in your possession at any given time, so it's to your advantage to trade with the person across the table for things you need and things you have too much of. There are also cards with special abilities for special characters. There are special buildings that do interesting things for you. There are still ports to trade at. There's still roads to build. It's the whole Settlers of Catan experience for two players. There's a number of expansion sets as well, just as there are for the Settlers of Catan game. You know, you've got Cities and Knights, you've got Seafarers for Settlers of Catan. Well, in this one, there's actually, I think, 8 different expansions you can get, and they go from everything like traders and builders to barbarians and peasants to wizards and other, you know, it's just tons of things that you can add into this game, and it's not collectible.
See, that was something I hadn't realized, that there were so many expansions for the card game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just buy the expansion you want and incorporate it however you want to. It does take a little bit of getting used to in terms of gameplay, but once you've got the hang of it, things go pretty fast. You've still got your, like, longest road and biggest army and all that kind of stuff. it's just, if you've got two people and you want to kill about an hour or so, this is a really cool way to do it, because it's got great art, and it's a lot of, on one hand, it's a lot of independent play, because you're working on building your side. But there's also a lot of interaction, because you gotta, you know, like I said, trade resources, and you're kind of working to see what you can do with your opponent while not exactly handing the game to him. So consider this if you're looking for two-player games and you happen to really enjoy The Settlers of Catan.
Yeah, I was really surprised at how well it's played as a two-player game, because the board game, you absolutely have to have at least three players to pull it off. And this really is a nice mechanic to it that will give you a lot of the same experience of the board game, but in a two-player format.
So that's Settlers of Catan card game. The next game, and I know we said we weren't going to talk about war games all that much, because they're, you know, very obviously two-player. But the next one is kind of a war game light. So if you have a taste for war games, this might be something you want to check out. And it's called Wings of War. Essentially what you have is a bunch of cards, surprisingly enough. And these cards represent airplanes and flight paths and various other sundry things. And there's two versions of Wings of War. There's Wings of War for the First World War, and there's Wings of War for the Second World War. And they play a little differently, but by and large it's the same set of mechanics. What you're going to be doing is laying out cards to indicate your flight path, and then executing that flight path simultaneously with the other player, and then taking a measurement to see if you're within shooting range. If you're within shooting range, you do some damage, and you try to shoot down the other player's planes. This actually can be played either two or four or more players, but it's designed for two players. You fly a squad of planes, and it's a game that Andy and I have had a lot of fun with over the years. There's a bunch of neat stuff for it.
Yeah, and they continue to release more neat stuff for it.
Yes.
Expansions and miniatures and...
numerous expansions.
Gaming mats and... curse them.
Yes. Curse them all.
Yeah, it's I'd have to put that in probably my top 10 list of favorite games. I mean, that's... I've just had a lot of fun with that one. And when you throw the miniatures in, it just adds that little bit more to it. The game is fun as it is out of the box, but yeah, you get a couple people together and you can have a really good time with that game.
Yeah, and one of the neat things is one of the expansions, they've actually made it possible to play this game solo. It's the Burning Drakens expansion, and what it's got is a bunch of balloons, dirigibles or whatever you want to call them, that you can take runs at and try to shoot down and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're not easy to take down.
No, surprisingly. I don't know why that should be the case.
Yeah, you spend a lot of time flying around in circles trying to shoot it down while a defending aircraft tries to do the same thing to you. So,
And the basic gameplay is very simple and very fast and pretty easy to follow along. And then you can kind of ramp it up in stages. You can start messing with altitude and takeoffs and landings and you know, adding like ground fire and bombing runs and all kinds of stuff and make it as complex as you want. So it kind of fills in that war game itch if you don't want to break out a big, huge war game for just a couple of people.
Yeah, and it's safe to say that, yeah, it does cover that ground, but it, like you say, without having to break out a huge box of miniatures or something. If you want to play a full-scale, you know, war game, if you're going to use miniatures or, you know, some of the other two-player war games that we've mentioned before, but this is really a fast and very fun type of game that you can get into.
Yeah, and it's always fun to zoom around the table and eventually shoot Andy down.
Well, yeah, me, Jake, you know,
anybody I can get in my sights.
Yeah. And the best part of it is watching people try and plan out their flight path. So,
right. Because you do what we call the robot dance, which is you sit there and you, okay, this card goes this way, so if I turn my body this way, somehow that helps me decide what the next move is going to be. And then I turn my body that way and decide that one. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and apparently I still don't know left from right because I distinctly remember the last game we played. I put the wrong cards down and went damn near off the table.
Yeah. Yeah. You and one of our other friends seem to have that habit of flying into or off of various things. But that's all right. So returning for a moment to the sports game genre, let's take a look at a game called Pizza Box Football. And why do they call this Pizza Box Football, Andy?
Because you play it on a pizza box.
Yeah. Essentially, the board and everything all folds up into a pizza box, and you just, you know, unfold the thing, set up your bits and whatnot, and go to town. Now, this game relies heavily on cross-referencing things on a chart. So you'll decide what play you're going to run offensively. Your opponent decides what he's going to do defensively. You roll some dice, consult the chart for your results, cross-referencing the defensive play and the offensive play. It's a little technical, but it's still pretty fun. You don't have, you know, all 11 men down on the field and all that stuff. Instead, you just have pegs that keep track of your downs and, you know, how far you've gone and your score and your time and all that. So this is definitely a simulation of football. And it's a simulation that occurs at three different levels. You have the basic fun fast game. You have what might be called more of a collegiate complexity. And then you have the full-on professional game, which fully models everything that, you know, you would see in a professional football game. Each level that you step up requires a larger investment of time. So, for example, the basic game can be played maybe 45 minutes or so, whereas the full-on professional game is going to take you the 2 hours that a football game takes. You know. All the teams, all the NFL teams are represented with their unique strengths and abilities and plays on a series of cards. And these cards are updated every year to account for the new rosters and new players and all that kind of stuff. So if you're looking for a two-player football simulation sort of thing, we like to recommend Pizza Box Football.
Yeah, I think they've also got a baseball version, don't they?
They do have a Pizza Box Baseball. I have yet to check it out in any way, shape, or form.
I haven't gotten around to that one. But the one thing that is nice about, I believe they do this with both games, but particularly with Pizza Box Football, every year for Super Bowl, they print out stat cards for the two Super Bowl teams, and yep, you can play the game out and see how close it comes to what it actually plays out on TV.
Yeah, they actually provide those particular stat cards for free. You download them from their website. You play the game, you turn in your results, and I believe there's a prize involved, depending on...
I think so, yeah. Every year they have a competition to see who plays the game out the most closely, or I'm not sure what the stats are on it.
Closest to the actual result of the Super Bowl.
The actual result of the game. But yeah, it's nice because all you need to do is buy the initial game and then, download the updates from off the internet, which is a lot of fun.
Right, and as I recall, they've been pretty accurate in the last 4 years.
They have. It's actually pretty neat the way the stats come down.
Yep, good stuff. We like it. Now, there are those who are going to complain that my next one is a full-on war game. And I will staunchly maintain that it is not a full-on war game. Okay?
You'll feel like you're in a full-on war game.
Yeah, this is definitely a simulation. And yeah, there's some shooting and some zipping around the map and tactics and things like that. But I still say this is not a war game. The game in question is Starfleet Battles, which, depending on how in-depth and involved you want to get, can cost you quite a bit of money to get into. But what it is, essentially, is a Star Trek game in which you are the commander of a starship, and you are usually given a scenario which requires you to basically shoot down the other starship.
Yeah, pretty simple that way.
Yep, and best played two-player. Believe me on this one.
Yeah, if you get...
two-player ship-on-ship.
Yeah, if you were to get, four, six, eight players, take a week off from work, because it's going to take you a while to finish it.
You figure... Easily, for every player you add, you are adding an hour to the game.
Easily, yeah. It's got that much going on each ship with all of the things that you have to track and do and think ahead, bringing your shields up, taking your shields down, priming torpedoes. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff that you have to keep track of. And it really does keep you on your toes and kind of off balance while all this is going on, you're still having to plot a course and anticipate where your enemy's going to go. So,
exactly. And what weapons you're going to bring to bear. How good are your shields? How much life support are you allocating? How many batteries are you charging? How many torpedoes are you arming? How many phaser banks are you firing? What's your... This is a simulation of what it might be like to be the captain of a starship in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, it really... It's really intense the way they've figured all this stuff in. It does play out to be a long game, but it is a lot of fun.
Oh yes, I can remember. Now this is an example of the complexity of this game, all right, and how much time it takes. I can remember in junior high playing about 4 or 5 turns every lunch hour.
Yeah.
And it's. You know, no doubt about it. It's complex, but it's not as complex as some people would have you believe. Because one of the nice things about the way the rules are written is that even though it's a very large, very thick book, you only need to know the pieces that apply directly to your ship.
And another nice thing is everything is referenced throughout the book. If you need to look up the particular type of torpedo you're using or what your phaser banks are capable of, how much energy you can store, it's all referenced right there on the page that you're reading from, and it'll tell you where you need to find out the rest of that information and bring you back to where you were.
Yeah, it's a very well done set of rules. It's what, is it 4th or 5th edition of the rules now?
I believe so, yeah.
Very well done set of rules. Once you get over the initial barrier to learning the rules, they become fairly easy to understand and apply. And this is just a game that Andy and I really, really enjoy and don't get to play enough of.
Yeah, and another thing that works for me with it is, of course, you know, you get to have scale miniatures of the Enterprise and, you know, Klingon D7 battle cruisers.
Yeah, how is the painting of those miniatures going?
It's about where it was 2 years ago when I started on.
about that. But if you buy the basic set, you get the little cardboard punch outs and all that stuff, and those work just fine. Absolutely wonderful. We just decided we were going to get some miniatures and put those into play.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun because they're nicely sculpted miniatures for as small as they are, mm-hmm. And for what kind of detail you have on a starship that small, they're actually pretty nice. Yeah. So,
there are numerous supplements for this game, and by numerous I mean, you know, start at 10 and work your way up.
Easily, yeah. The just getting the basic set will have you going for a while, but yeah, there's a ton of additions that you can add to this game, and every ship imaginable and quite a few I had never even heard of are available in miniature form. So
yes. So if you're looking for a complex game that you know is kind of in that sci-fi genre and is very in-depth and very will kind of suck you into it, Starfleet Battles may be your choice. Howsomever, if you are not looking for a complex game with lots and lots of rules and lots of depth and lots of strategy, then may I recommend to you Der Schwarze Parrot, Das Duel. That's German. Basically, it means the Black Pirate, the Duel. And this is a game for two that you're playing pirates. And the object of your pirate is to sail across the open water to your opponent's island, make landfall, steal his treasure. What you have are a couple of bellows with which you will blow your wooden pirate ship with cloth sail across the table, trying to make contact with your opponent's island. Well, I guess there is one die involved, and that tells you how much wind you've got to use.
But, yeah.
But it's not how your movement and your play is controlled, really. The first one to steal 3 treasures, I believe it is, wins the game. In addition, your opponent, as you're sailing across the open water, will be firing his cannon at you, which is also operated with his bellows. So there's, you know, there's the chuff, chuff, chuff of Andy trying to blow his pirate ship across the water, and there's the woof of the cannon being fired at him and the cannonball bouncing off his mast and sending him back home.
Yes, there's no gunpowder. It's all pneumatic.
That's right. It's a really fun little game. Very rules-like.
As silly as it may sound, it is a lot of fun, yeah. Because there's a little bit of dexterity involved and a little bit of luck, and just, you know, if you happen to have a beer nearby and an eye patch, you'll want to play it.
That's right. That's right. It's a whole lot of fun. It's available from Haba Games, and you might also be able to find it at various other places online, but it's Der Schwarze Pirat Das Duel. It's the two-player version of an actually much larger game. Yeah, it's just cool. It's great for killing 15, 20 minutes and just having a lot of fun and making jokes, and it's beer and pretzels all the way. Mm-hmm. Now, this next one you're going to have to talk about, because I've played it but once, and I barely remember that play.
But, well, that's great, because I barely remember it either.
So go for it. Fjords.
The next one is Fjords, not to be confused with a Norwegian automobile manufacturer. Yeah, basically what you're doing is you're trying to, I think you're building farms, as I recall, and trying to gain access to other areas next to you. As you're doing so, you're laying down little wooden chips, and as you expand out, you're actually building the fjord that you're on. I believe this would qualify as a tile laying game, doesn't it?
I believe so. Yes, seems to be my recollection.
Yeah, as you're moving along, you're building your fjord, and you're trying to cover, like I say, cover as much ground as you can while your opponent is doing the same thing. And it's kind of a seesaw aggression thing back and forth. Just a very small, lightweight game. But it's very interesting the way it can play out once you start getting your chips put down. As you're doing this, you have a certain number of chips that you can play out to capture area.
Yes. Would you like the official description, sir?
Oh, do you have one?
Yeah. In this game, two clan leaders fight each other using the right tactics for a fruitful plot of land along Norway's coast. They quickly build up villages at strategic locations and fight with anything they can to ensure the larger portion of the region for their clan. So there you go. It's area control and tile laying. Tile placement.
Tile placement, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it's quick, lightweight, mm-hmm. Inexpensive.
Yeah.
Fits in your backpack wherever you're going. You want to bust out a small game, take it with you.
Yeah, it's kind of like Carcassonne in a way.
A little bit, yeah.
Because at the end of the game, you score by how much area you control, so yeah. Definitely. Like I said, I played it once, and I remember enjoying it. But really, it's in your collection, or was that in the other collection?
I believe it's in mine. I've got it at home somewhere. It's just one of the ones that doesn't fall into rotation very often. So,
So yeah, check out Fjords if you're looking for sort of a light version of Carcassonne, which Cat may or may not be.
Oh yeah, that's another one she might pick up.
She'd like. It's got wooden bits, little huts, all kinds of neat junk.
Yes, huts.
Yep. All right.
Not the ones from Nalhutta.
Right. So I'm gonna skip down to the bottom of our list and then come back up and cover the one in between there.
Oh sure, you do.
Okay.
That.
Since we said Fjords is kind of Carcassonne light, may I point out to you the two-player version of Carcassonne called Carcassonne the Castle. This is, to date, the only version of Carcassonne which I personally thoroughly enjoy. I know. I'm supposed to be a gamer. I'm supposed to like Carcassonne. But I'll be honest with you. Carcassonne the Castle is, in my opinion, the best of the batch and the most fun I've had playing a Carcassonne game. Unlike regular Carcassonne, where you have all the table basically can be your area, Carcassonne the Castle is dedicated two-player. That means you're not going to have three or four or anything like that. It's two-player only. And you set up this frame, which is, of course, the outside walls of the castle. And it also acts as your scoring track. Then within the castle, within that frame, you're building the various little buildings that are part of a castle. You know, you've got livery stables and that kind of stuff. But it's the same deal as regular Carcassonne. You draw a random tile, you place it down where you want it, and then you try to build off of it. And you place your little meeples to score points for, you know, largest this and largest that and most of these and that kind of stuff. I don't know why I like this better than almost every other version of Carcassonne. Perhaps because it's a little tighter. It's a little less random and a little less of a time eater, I suppose. You know, you're not dealing with three or four people looking at a random tile trying to figure out where in the world on the board it's going to go and what orientation it should be in and that kind of stuff. This plays a lot faster and a lot tighter. And I suppose that's probably why I like it more. So, yeah, if you're a Carcassonne fan and you can't always get three or four people together to play Carcassonne, although you could play regular Carcassonne two-player, I think Carcassonne the Castle works better as a two-player version of Carcassonne than regular Carc does.
Yeah, I think that's one of the aspects of it that I guess you would say draws it together a little more, is that you're so confined in where you can build and what you can put down. So it really speeds up the game a little bit, but it tightens things up a little bit where you don't have so much freedom that, you know, it spans an entire table.
Right. And it's just, I don't know, aesthetically, I think it's a lot better, too. I think it's got better artwork myself. There's just more going on to look at and enjoy and have fun with.
Yeah.
Okay, so Carcassonne the Castle. Backing up now to what will now be our last game that we're going to talk about, two-player-wise.
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's pretend that for some reason, Starfleet Battles was not complex enough for you. Let's pretend that 3 hours is too small of an amount of time to fill. Let's say you've got a major four-day weekend coming up, or you're on vacation for a week or something, you and a buddy. And let's pretend that you want a game that's dripping, as they say, in theme. Well, then for you, I have, from Fantasy Flight Games, War of the Ring. The setup alone will take you an hour.
Yeah, no kidding.
But once you get that set up and you start playing, you have an amazing game on your hands that will blow your mind. It follows not the movies, but the books for Lord of the Rings, and details the battle going on around the ring bearers trying to get the ring to Mount Doom. This is a full-on map of Middle-earth. You have hundreds upon hundreds of little plastic figures to represent your troops and your various, you know, armies and things and whatnot. And you have massive amounts of cards and little chips. It's a Fantasy Flight Games game. So you're going to have cards and little chips and, you know, bits and pieces all over the place.
Yeah, and an amazing map representation on the game board. It's just
it's gorgeous.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous game all the way around. But it is an investment in time. And if you don't mind, and like I said, you probably want to set aside about 4 hours. If you don't mind sitting down for a very thick, very complex, very thematic game, this is the game for you. I have played this game, I think, twice. Because it does take so long to set up and requires so much time. But both times, it was just amazing to see this whole thing come together. You've got, of course, Sauron and Saruman versus the dwarves and the elves and the men, and there's places to capture and event cards that go off and special abilities for various characters, and you're literally managing the entire battle for Middle-earth. And the way it's done is an incredible experience. It's hard to explain a game turn because there's so much in it. But essentially, you draw some cards. They tell you what abilities or troops or reinforcements are available to you. You maneuver your troops around the map. You try to anticipate, if you're playing Sauron or Saruman, you're trying to anticipate where the ring bearers are going to be going. If you're playing the elves, dwarves, and men, then you're trying to head off these, you know, the bad guys and keep them away from key locations. And the whole time, you're also managing the nine ring bearers and trying to get them from the Shire in, or actually, I think it's from Rivendell into Mount Doom, where they can hopefully destroy the ring. And even that's not guaranteed if you get there.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot to pay attention to. It's very in-depth and will take the utmost of your concentration to be successful at. It's a great game. I cannot say enough about how good this game is, because you really have to bear through the setup and sit down and play this multiple times and just immerse yourself in what this game is doing.
Yeah, bring a life ring, because you will get immersed. You will get literally drenched with the amount of stuff that's going on in this game. It really is a brain burner when it comes right down to it. I've only had a chance to almost play it once, and the setup alone, like you said, it takes an hour at least just to get the game set up and get things to where you need to be so you can start playing the game. And then once the ball starts rolling, it really is very, very interesting the way it does follow the books, it does follow the storyline, and it can become very difficult at times if you don't do what you need to do, and you miss a step somewhere. You've got orcs crawling all over your back. You've got all kinds of things that can happen.
Yeah, at the risk of repeating myself, you will not believe how good this game is. You need to try it. Even if you only ever try it once, take the time to do so. Well, that's two-player games. We've gone from the simple to the complex, with several stops in between. That's what we like to do. If you're looking for a two-player game, I cannot recommend enough using BoardGameGeek.com and their game search feature. You can put right in there, you want two players, and let it pull up every two-player game that is in existence and just kind of pick and choose. You get them on all kinds of themes, all kinds of different styles. For example, we didn't even touch on abstract games like chess or Go or anything like that. And those are well worth checking out. There's the GIF series of games. There's, like I said, the Cosmos two-player series of games. There's a variety of small publishers with card games and things like that. It's well worth checking out. Even if you normally play with a group of people that, it's like three or more people or whatever, two-player games are a great way to kill a little bit of time before the rest of the group shows up. So, give it a thorough check. Even if you don't think you would ever like a two-player game, I'll bet you there's one out there that will appeal to you in some way.
Yeah, especially the Cosmos series of games are very nice in that they take up a very small amount of space. They all come in a fairly small box. They're well done, well thought out, good artwork and stuff on them, good gameplay. And they're not terribly expensive. You can pick one up for about $20.
Yes, absolutely. And there are other options even cheaper or more expensive, depending on how you want to go.
Right.
So give it a look.
Join us now as we enter a world that many think doesn't exist. A world of strange sights, strange sounds, and pleasant scents. Come with us to That's What She Said.
Hey, this is Kat. I doubt I'm the only adult who can be immature on occasion. So anybody want to play the dot game with me? Where you take a piece of paper and draw a grid of dots, then take turns drawing a line each until all of the dots magically become squares. I mean, come on, there's lots of strategy involved in that. Or what about MASH? Oh, wait, probably not very many girls listening. I know, what about Super Mario Brothers? Or Mario 3? Sorry, I never got into 2. Any takers? Fine. I'll just go turn on my NES and take my angst out on the A and B buttons.
Aw, Kat, I'll play dots with ya. dots.
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 That's all we got time for, kids. We'll see you next week.
well, I tried.
on the table.
Theoretically, we play games around here. You know, a bit. And just as theoretically, we have fun doing it. Having said that, here's what we got to play this week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got to torture the CPR instructor last night.
That was kind of a game. A little bit.
I had her convinced that there was a large spider under her chair.
Yeah, that was funny, actually. She was across the room on that one.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah. I finished my first go-around on Sid Meier's Pirates.
Oh, are you the monarchy or a...
apparently I'm a bishop or something.
A bishop?
Yeah.
You'll be pope next week, right?
Right. Next week I'm pope. Yeah, that's... I finished it. It's kind of a disappointing finish because there's no real end to the game. You keep going as long as you want to until you decide, well, I'm done playing that one, so
yeah.
I'll start a new one. And having completed every available mission and every little side quest and all that other stuff, well, it may or may not get a second replay. I don't know.
You know, there's always Mass Effect we can go back to.
Yeah, because I still need to finish those. So
yeah, I do too.
That was my week. What did you play this last week?
I played Work Myself into the Ground and, you know, not get any sleep and, you know, do a CPR class and annoy the teacher. And,
I've played that game, and I got to say, I don't like the bits.
Yeah, I'm tired of that game. It's time for a new one. Yeah.
Oh, I did get to briefly play your Force Unleashed on the PSP.
Very briefly.
Let me explain to you, Gamer Nation, how this went. I had about an hour in which to play. So Andy gets the thing all loaded up and he hands it to me, and I wait for a cinematic to play, and then sit a loading screen, and wait for another cinematic to play, and then sit at a loading screen, and then wait for some more cinematic to play, and then sit at a loading screen, and then, oh, I get to move! So I moved, and that triggered off another cinematic, and then I got to wait at a loading screen, and then there was a loading screen, followed by another cinematic, and then all of a sudden, after about, you know, 10 repetitions of this, I'm finally somewhere where I have actual control of what's going on, and... the batteries died.
So, how'd you like that? Did you have fun with that?
I'm thinking the PSP is not the platform for that game.
Well, I think it's... I think all of the games, I'm sure, have the cinematics and the loads and whatnot. The loads are... quite a bit longer than I would like on the PSP, and I don't know if that's just a problem with the programming or if it's something inherent with the PSP, but like I said, it's not my favorite Star Wars game, but I mean, it wasn't bad to play through, so. Yeah.
The 15 or 20 seconds I actually got to swing a saber and do some Force Lightning were kind of cool.
Yeah, I enjoy Force Lightning. That's, yeah, you know,
I did a lot force of,
I can go through an area and never draw my lightsaber. I just make everybody dance, yeah, and then lay down smoking.
I do have to point out, though, that Gamorreans are unreasonably tough against a lightsaber.
Yeah, a lot of the enemies are unreasonably tough.
I can't figure out why it takes 16, 17 swipes of a lightsaber to take down a Gamorrean.
Yeah, you should be able to mince one in, yeah, you know, three.
I should be looking at sausage by swing four.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. So that was our week of gaming. Such as, you know what? We didn't do Project Death Race.
No, we were going to, and yeah, somebody else canceled the game this week.
I flunked out this week.
can't blame it on me, can't blame it on Jake.
No, that was me this time. Not for lack of wanting to, but for lack of ability to stay awake. For whatever reason, I've had very short sleep this last, you know, the previous week, and I was getting like 4 hours a night, and it was just, you know, game night was getting closer and closer, and I was getting tireder and tireder, and it just got to the point where, you know, I'm not going to survive it. If I try to make it, it's not going to be worth doing, because I'll be so far out of it that I won't contribute anything useful, so let's just postpone it.
Well, there's always this Thursday.
Yes, there is this Thursday. Jake has said he's available.
Oh.
Gee, in town.
We going to get to swing some lightsabers? Or?
I don't know, because I haven't done any work on that yet.
Yeah. It's only been 3 weeks. I mean,
I know. It's been 3 weeks.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that flakes off on that.
Oh, man.
Kind of stuff.
Well, it's not so much that I'm flaking. I mean, it's like I know I've got to do it. It's just a matter of, am I awake? Can I do it now? Or will I fall asleep in the middle of the first paragraph? Anyway, that was our table experience for the week.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Man down, call the Army, the Navy, the National Guard. Well, maybe not the National Guard. But somebody out there has to be able to help us stave off the end of the show. Anyone? Anyone at all?
I think Kat should unleash her angst on the end of the show. That'll keep it from happening.
Can you do that in public?
Well, probably not.
All right. Well, we actually occasionally get communications from our listeners. Did you know that?
I didn't know that because, I don't pay attention.
Well, since I went ahead and took a listener request for this show, for our topic, and thank you again, Kat, I thought I'd look at some of the other listener requests we've had recently. And the first one we come across is from Vaderson, otherwise known as Duncan, who has suggested, somewhat foolishly at this point, I must admit.
Doesn't he know?
that we take a look at Steve Jackson Games, which he says is always a fun line. However, he does suggest that we call in an expert in the subject matter if we need to. And since that may be the only way we ever cover Steve Jackson Games is if somebody else comes on the show and covers it for us, we might just do that. Just to get it out of the way and say, there you go.
There you go. We did it. Don't ask again.
Right. He also suggested Warhammer-based games. He says, there have been a lot of Warhammer and 40K-based games out there that are not the minis games. I'm a big fan of Space Crusade and Blood Bowl. Could be a nice tie-in after a minis episode.
Yeah, isn't Blood Bowl a miniatures game, I thought?
I thought it had miniatures.
I believe I've played that game once or 100 times.
Miniature rules?
I distinctly remember miniatures.
Yeah, how about that Crusade thing? You know anything about that?
I don't know anything about Space Crusade. What's he talking about?
All right, fine. Yeah, and there was what's the other one? Space Hulk or whatever it is.
Space Hulk was a spinoff of the Warhammer 40K games. It was dealing specifically with Gene Stealers against the Space Marines on board a, oddly enough, Space Hulk.
Well, there you go.
Which is a pretty cool little game in itself, but it's very, very brutal using the original rule set. Yeah, there's a lot of dying and blood and guts and arms being ripped off. So,
well,
yeah, cool.
Generally we like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Although I do have to say I've not played Space Hulk or Space Crusade, and only barely played Blood Bowl, and really didn't get into it all that much at that. So that may be a bit tricky unless Andy wants to do an entire show essentially solo.
No, why not? You do it all the time.
Yeah. Bam. In your face. Oh, wait, you did that all on your own. Didn't you? You
didn't
need help
from
me.
See, I throw myself under the bus.
There you go. Beat me to it. Mm-hmm. Duncan has a number of suggestions, actually. He's got quite the little prolific batch of suggestions. He wants a best Ameritrash show, which I will grant you, we have not actually done.
We haven't, and there's quite a few games out there that we could probably grind down into a fine little mist and, you know, dump it on a salad or something.
Great. A little powdery slice of Ameritrash. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's something we'll look at for your future show, the Ameritrash show. It'll be interesting to see what kind of list we come up with for that one.
What's his best dead games?
Best dead games. I think he means games that are out of print.
Ah.
Or games that never really took off, maybe? I don't know. I'm not entirely
There's
certain.
There's a few of those out there.
Mm-hmm. I have a few. It'll be interesting. I don't know. It'll probably get combined with a variety of other shows. We'll tell you, you know, every so often about something that's long out of print, but if you can find it.
Well, the problem with games like that is you talk about them, get people interested in them, and they go down to the game store and they look at you funny because that game's been out of print for 10 years. So
yeah. So it's a little hard to talk one up. I mean, there is eBay. But if it's a really good dead game, it's going to cost you an arm, a leg, and probably your firstborn child.
Yeah, you can look on eBay. You can even look on Board Game Geek. There's a seller function on there that people have little stores and stuff set up. But again, if it's out of print and it's worth its weight, it's going to cost you a few bucks. I'm still looking for Old Glory.
Oh yeah. Still looking.
Yeah, it's, somebody said they had that. I never did hear back from them.
Oh no, you're thinking Battle Cry.
Battle Cry. Excuse me. Yes. Yeah. It's a Civil War. Civil War.
Right. Yeah. The Civil War Commands and Colors.
Yeah. I wish they'd reprint that because it would be a lot of fun to have.
Yep. And then finally, his final suggestion is old war games. He says actually a show of Hex and Chit war games would. C-H-I-T. War games would be awesome. And then he goes on to say, Panzer Blitz for the win.
For the win. That's what that means.
Yes. Yeah.
Not, oh.
Yeah.
I... Yeah, okay. I was thinking something different.
Yeah, I know you were.
Yeah.
We could do that, but I don't know about Andy, but I have a limited experience of war games. I mean, full-on war games. Not full-on gamer, but full-on war games.
Yeah, a lot of those, I mean, first thing that comes to mind is like squad leader and advanced squad leader. Mm-hmm. And I just never did get into a lot of those games because they didn't really appeal to me back when I had started playing games. And once I finally got into gaming and got into wargaming, I, you know, jumped that boundary and went right into miniatures. So
yeah,
they have their place on the game table, but I don't have a lot of experience with them.
Right. I mean, we do. Okay, to be honest with you, Commands and Colors Ancients was my attempt to enter into the wargaming branch of the hobby. But the problem was that Commands and Colors Ancients was such a good game, and I enjoyed it so much that I was almost afraid to try any other war game on the grounds that it wouldn't be as good as Commands and Colors. I've looked at a few. You know, there are certain... The other thing with war games is they tend to be time frame dependent. I don't really want to play Napoleonics. That doesn't appeal to me. I'm not certain that replaying the Civil War over and over again is going to appeal to me in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, it's got that kind of barrier to entry for me. There are certain things that I am interested in checking out, but we're talking like Persian wars, you know, from the Persian Empire, and probably, you know, even some of the biblical era war games that are the few that are out there would be interesting to me. And I'm trying to think. The other half of the difficulty is I actually do own a few war games, but I never ever get a chance to play them. I mean, I've had them for years, and they still are essentially brand new because I've never, you know, I've opened them up, I've read the rule books, and I can't get anybody else to sit down and read the rule book, and I'm sure not going to explain, you know, the 60 or 80 odd pages of the harpoon rules to anybody, or yep. Airstrike, or, you know.
Yeah, it seems I've got a rather large book or two at home for Harpoon.
Yeah. And really, now that you've got it, we don't really have an excuse for not having had Harpoon on the table at some point and at least tried it out. Other than the fact that my little round table probably isn't big enough to actually play it on.
Yeah, that, and I just, you know, haven't got around to buying any little ships because, you know, I gotta have miniatures when I do a game like that.
Yeah, because as I remember in Harpoon, you're supposed to start your ships at the limits of detection range.
Yeah.
Which is several feet.
Mm-hmm.
At a minimum, I mean, we're talking like 4 to 8 feet for some of those as the smallest range, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that we'll ever get around to covering war games in depth on the show, just because of those limitations that we have. But if it becomes possible, we'll certainly give it a shot. GM Chris who you may remember from Order 66 and, you know, other places around the D20 Radio Network, had some suggestions for us as well. He says, in line with your Poor Gamer's Almanac episode, where we talked about getting games from thrift stores and budget locations, any thought of covering the cheap-ass games line? Well, yes. I've played 5 or 6 different cheap-ass games. I'm not familiar with their current line, though. And there's no location where we can get cheap-ass games here. I don't think even Funnygan really carries cheap-ass games.
I remember when I had the store open, we had a couple in there from time to time, mm-hmm. but they're not real prevalent around here, especially at Funnygan, which is where I would expect to see them. So
right, because they're certainly not showing up at the other place.
Well, not much is.
To carry on with his missive, he says, with a series of Euro-style games for $5 and $10, it might be worth talking about. He loved Enemy Chocolatier, which he felt was very Euro, and also thought that Agora was a fun little abstract strategy game. And you're right, in most cases, cheap-ass games are a lot of fun. It's just a matter of us being able to get them, and I know, I can jump on the internet and I can order them from cheap-ass games themselves, or I can, you know, get them on eBay or through some other online retailer, but my credit cards limp as it is. And if you show me a batch of $5 games, well, I'm not going to buy just one, am I?
They're small. Take 10.
Yeah, no kidding. But if it becomes possible for us to do that, we'll certainly take a look. And, I mean, we could discuss the cheap-ass games that we've actually gotten our hands on and played, you know, Lord of the Fries and Falling and some of those other ones. So that might be a possible future show. He also suggests we talk about Ice House. He says there's currently about 8 bajillion games you can play with plastic pyramids, the history of it all, everything. He says he's an Ice House junkie, and he knows some others who are as well. So, Chris, when can we schedule you? And are you prepared to face us in a podcasting situation? Yeah, I do own some Ice House pyramids. I own a set of orange Ice House pyramids. Do you know how I got this set of orange Ice House pyramids?
How did you get those?
They were sent to me as a promotional display copy. That's it, just the pyramids. No instructions for games or anything like that, just the pyramids.
Well, isn't that fun?
So while I do have them and I know what they are and I am familiar with the fact that there are a variety of Ice House games that you can play, I have not myself played any. Which, you know, technically makes me a little sad, I suppose. So, Chris, yes, we'll talk about Ice House, but we're going to need to talk to you first. And for his final suggestions, he says, odd RPGs such as Diceless Amber, Spirit of the Century, Grimm, stuff like that. You know what? That's an excellent idea.
Indeed. We need to play Grimm.
We do.
We need to get that. Well, we need to do a lot of things. But
yeah. What we need to do is become independently wealthy.
Ooh. Get busy on that, would you?
I will. Yeah. I'll get in line.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And that way we can have all kinds of free time for playing all the things that we should have had played by now. And oh, well. Such as it is. But yes, we definitely need to do a show about odd RPGs. And in fact, it was one of our earlier shows was going to be about our odd RPGs, but we decided at the time that was too broad for such an early show, so we put it off for a while. I would keep an eye out for us doing any more RPG-related shows in the near future. You might find yourself somewhat surprised. Yeah. Now, for our next order of business here in Back Chat, I want to talk briefly, he said, about playtesting games. Now, I know a number of you from Gamer Nation have sent us rule sets and, you know, instructions and things with the hopes that we would play test your game for you. And that we would be able to offer you some constructive feedback about those play tests. And this, in fact, applies to both the ones you fans have submitted and more official playtesty things, like, for example, Project Death Race. As you can tell, we're somewhat crowded in our schedules. And I don't really know how to explain this, but we have such limited game time at the moment. And so many things that we want to play that are mainstream already, that we're hard pressed to fit things in around that. I mean, like, I've got sitting right here a set of rules for, let me see here, what was this called? Yeah, Siege, which was sent in by one of our listeners. See, there they are, right there. And I've read through the rules, and it seems like an interesting game. I don't know. Did you read these, Andy?
I haven't had a chance to. No.
It seems like an interesting game, one that would be fun, but to be honest, I don't want to, and this may be slightly unfair on my part, I suppose, I don't want to fight through a set of rules that are untested and burn up what game time I do have doing that. So what we need to do is we need to come up with a different way to play test games. Or to allow guys who are interested in having their games playtested, make them available to people. So I think one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a forum thread in our regular forums, and I'm just going to call it requests for playtests or something like that, where if you've got a set of rules or you've modified a game or something like that, and you would like people in the Gamer Nation to check out your rules for you and offer you some feedback. Perhaps people who have more available time on their hands than either Andy or I currently do. Then you could go into that forum, you could post a way to get the rules, either, you know, by contacting you or you know, some method of your choosing. And Gamer Nation can help you play test your game. So I guess at this point I should apologize to those who have sent rules, because we have certainly not been very diligent about getting them on the table and playtesting things and working them out. But as you can tell from our recent couple of on the tables, there's been a number of issues with us getting together even to do regular games. So I think it's probably more unfair to you at this point to leave you hanging in anticipation of us reviewing your game and playtesting it. And maybe, you know, we can get you some better help through the auspices of the listeners of this podcast. So I'll set up a forum for you, and it's up to you to take it from there, I suppose. Anything to add, Mr. Andy? Oh, you dog.
I'm sorry, were you talking to me?
No. We've had rather a fun time trying to get this episode together, and by fun I mean, god damn it, I hated it.
Yeah, it only crashed on us, so, you know, two or three times more than it usually does.
Yeah. If you were in the chat room, thank you for your patience the first time it crashed. I could not justify making you sit through a second crash, so we ended the chat room early. And in fact, at this rate, it's now, what, 3.5-4 hours after we started the initial recording?
Yeah.
Something like
about,
that.
About 4.5 hours, yeah.
Yeah. So, we're gonna finish up this recording, and I'll probably not edit this and get it up until sometime Wednesday after work. Because I gotta be at work in another 7-8 hours, something like
7.5 hours, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Gamer Nation. This has been probably the worst episode in terms of getting it done that we have yet had. But here it is. And if you'd like to comment on it, or contact us about anything else, or yell at us for not playtesting your game, or whatever it is you want to do, you can get a hold of us at gameon@d20radio.com. You can jump on our forums at www.d20radio.com/forum. And, you know, as always, be sure to check out the latest piece of thing that isn't getting updated anytime soon or at all or something, I don't know, at www.d20radio.com/gameon for our blog. Kat writes on there, which is
good. Yeah, she updates more than we do.
Yeah.
So that's,
and you've got pictures.
Thank heaven we got her. So
yeah, you've got pictures of your minis for various car combat games up.
Yeah, for Warlands, I put a couple pictures up for one of the trucks I painted.
Yep, good stuff there. So give that a check, and yeah, I guess we'll finish out the show then, sir. So until next time, Gamer Nation,
game on.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of Soundsnap.com and Freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
Nothing to hear here, or here, or here.